Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network Documentary Special presents Give Us a Job.
I wonder how you imagine people get jobs in international broadcasting. By surprise, perhaps.
There she is. Hey, you!
Who, me?
Yeah, speak English?
Yes.
Can you read?
Yeah.
Can you write?
Yeah.
Well, you'll do then. Get in the car. You're gonna be a star.
In the real world, if you want to get into international broadcasting, you will have to make the first move. No phones will ring at home offering you a job. Our survey of some 10 international broadcasting stations reveals that each are looking for different qualities in a person, depending on what the station's trying to do. But some broad guidelines do emerge, and it's these we intend to discuss in this programme. From the start, there are two ways into broadcasting. There's the front door. The larger broadcasting organisations do recruit a restricted number of trainees, usually from colleges and universities, who are taught everything from scratch. In general, such courses are an excellent way of getting experience, but competition to get on a course is usually very tough, and there's often no guarantee of a job at the end of it. But there's also the back door. With the present economic climate, most shortwave stations in the industrialised world have few new jobs on offer. But in addition to permanent staff, few stations would survive without the assistance of freelancers. These are people who are willing to do interviews and assist with programme making, either for a limited period, say a few months to help with the holiday period, or simply from week to week, as and when extra help is needed. It's risky because your income is totally dependent on other people, and, of course, your continued good health. You not only have to constantly think of new ideas for possible programmes, but also be able to adapt them to suit other people's needs. A station will expect you to fit in with their system, standards and ideals, and not the other way round. Well, with me now is someone whose voice should be well known to shortwave listeners. I'll give his name later on. He's been a freelance producer for many years. So what's the market like?
Well, it depends on very much on the sort of person you are. I happen to have been trained in a certain organisation when I was a little bit younger, and since then I've had the good luck to get around a lot, which means that one has been out in the world pushing and learning all the while. And that, I think, is actually one of the keys to whatever media organisation one wants to go into. You have to be, the English word is pushy. The first thing you've got to do is to learn to use the medium. It doesn't matter whether you're an agriculturalist or a motoring correspondent or you want to be a general programmes producer. You've still got to understand how radio works. Because if you don't understand, how can you explain to the engineers what you want? You must understand what goes on, to some extent, inside the equipment, but you must certainly understand how to use it and how other people should use it.
How can you get that experience?
It is very difficult in any country to get into radio if you're young and, let's say, straight out of school. Start trying to get a job somewhere as T-boy. Get inside a radio station, because if you're in a studio bringing the tea in, you're seeing how other people are working. You're seeing how the producer who's had 25 years' experience in radio is working. He may be old hat now, but you've got to know how he works before you can start thinking about the new ideas that'll be coming along in the future. So that's the first thing. Now, if you can't manage that, in a lot of countries, England again has this, there are hospital radio. Now, these are voluntary organisations. A lot of listeners will know about them. And they're an opportunity, since they're run by amateurs on very low budgets, they're desperate for help. And there are one or two very, very famous broadcasters came out of hospital radio, voluntary radio, university radio. Having done that, of course, you watch and learn and look for the opportunity.
So the key is to think, what can I offer the station, not what can they offer me? In general, women seem to have similar chances to men in international broadcasting. Though few stations have discontinued the microphone voice test, it appears that having a golden voice is less important in the 1980s than having something to say. So, do your talents fit in with what's wanted?
Hello, Mike Channel here on Radioactive, Britain's first national local radio station. It's 90 minutes past exactly here on Radioactive, and I'll be with you throughout the night, bringing you traffic reports, time checks, music, time checks, the usual competitions and phone-ins, time checks, and a host of other great features and time checks. And right away, with the time at 19 minutes past, here's our first request of the evening, and it comes from Zoe of Maidenhead. She asks us to say hi to Trevor. She says she's sorry, Trevor, and hopes you're still able to cycle.
You see, the emphasis on news and current affairs on shortwave means that there are few opportunities for the disc jockey or talk show host like that. So what background is needed? On the line from Bern in Switzerland is Mike McMahon, head of the English service at Swiss Radio International.
The designation of the people who work for us is reporter-producer. The fact that the person is a reporter before he's a producer means that we're actually looking for people with journalistic background. Now, we do take people from newspapers from time to time. We look for journalists who have a broadcasting background. We would first recruit within the organization, which we'd consider with any others. We recruit from Britain quite often through publications like the UK Press Gazette and often by word of mouth, or when someone by hazard applies just out of the blue and it looks like an interesting candidate, we keep that file warm as well. We don't have much turnover. In addition to the English service, we have an English language newsroom. And from time to time, the English language newsroom at Swiss Radio International is a source of English service personnel, because a person who comes to the newsroom as a sub-editor has basically a desk job. And if that person wants to expand his or her knowledge of the country, then sometimes it's logical to knock on the door of the English service.
But other stations look for other qualities. Phil van der Vlaert is the head of Radio Netherlands English service.
Our transmissions are made up of 20 minutes news and information and 30 minutes what we call a general program or a regionalized program. We are not looking in the first place for journalists to fill that 30 minutes. What we are looking for is producers, or I would rather use the word communicators, people who are capable of formulating a story in an attractive way so that the listeners have a lucid and clear understanding of what we are talking about.
But are you worried about accents?
Well, we do try to engage people from abroad whose native tongue is English. However, we have very good translators and people that have very good knowledge of the English language. When they are Dutchmen, they have a Dutch accent. Now, that is a very debatable point. In many cases, listeners see in an accent an identification of Radio Netherlands. However, for a proper understanding, it is absolutely necessary that the person who is on the microphone is completely fluent in the English language. Otherwise, you'll get a very amateurish situation. That's why, if a person goes in front of the microphone, he should have the fluency to be able to express himself. It is absolutely necessary that the person that is working in an international station has an understanding of the cultural, the frame of reference of his audience. We try to therefore engage people from the various regions to see that there is this link between what we experience in Holland, what we talk about, and how it is received at the other end.
This distinction is even more marked at Radio Canada International, as programme director Alan Vermilion now explains.
Really, people choose their career paths. Someone who comes into RCI as a journalist remains a journalist. You want to bring in the union. Yes, it is a separate union for the journalists and another one for the announcer producers. The door is always open for one to switch to the other. Someone who is an announcer-producer, we'd look for announcer-producer skills. And someone who would be going into our newsroom, we'd really look for journalistic skills. They're quite different.
What would your mother say if you told her you were thinking of a... Wait a minute, no, my throat, I got a frog.
If you're considering international broadcasting as a career, it's important that as well as getting the qualifications right, you should think of the complication of moving to a new country and also a new culture. Can you cope with a new lifestyle? And are you willing to get to know the locals? Or will you try to live in the illusion that you're at home in your home country? If your search brings you to Europe, Africa or Asia, you'd also be advised to learn the national language. Let's take an example by crossing to George Wood, who's a member of the English group at Radio Sweden International in Stockholm. Are you expected to have a university degree in Swedish, George?
I don't know if I would really put it that way exactly, but the thing is, we don't have a lot of people who do translating here. If you work in the English group, you're expected to know Swedish. We do get people from time to time who don't know very good Swedish. Sometimes they're freelancers, for example, new freelancers. And then we send them out on assignments to press conferences and things. But the understanding is that if someone is really going to get a job here, they have to learn the Swedish language. Although you can talk to anybody you want in Sweden in English, because virtually everyone in the country speaks the language, if you don't know Swedish, the newspapers, for example, are inaccessible. You go to press conferences, you don't know what people are talking about, things like that.
What about recruiting staff that speak one of the languages in Eastern Europe? Do you have any trouble finding the right people?
I don't know about that. I have a feeling that actually if you live in Western Europe, other Western countries, you may have a better chance at finding people who speak Eastern European languages. Of course, at Radio Sweden, we only have Russian. That's our only Eastern European language. As far as I know, it's been very difficult to recruit those people. I have a feeling that more refugees from Eastern Europe go to places like Britain or France, places like that, that they've heard a lot about in the East, and so that it might be easier for radio stations like the BBC to get Eastern European people. Of course, not all the people in our Russian group, by the way, are refugees. Some of them are people who've left the Soviet Union for a number of other reasons and are by no means exiled from that country and go back from time to time to visit the Soviet Union, which is, of course, very useful if you're going to have a service in Russian to actually have people from your service go back and check out how things are at home.
Well, likewise, you'll find English and Americans working at stations in Eastern Europe, like Radio Berlin International, for instance. Sometimes it's a political or religious conviction that drives people before the international broadcasting microphone. To others, broadcasting is just another job. But, George, do you find there's a tendency to want to change your passport after a while?
All of our announcers, of course, come from the target areas. Very few, I would say, have become Swedish citizens. I can think of two of my colleagues in the English group have become Swedish citizens. There are a number of advantages to maintaining citizenship in one's own country because you can go back home as often as you like. And there aren't that many advantages to being a Swedish citizen over being a permanent resident of Sweden. And, of course, none of us who come from abroad ever learn to speak Swedish totally accent-free. And none of us ever get totally accepted as Swedes. We're always foreigners, and so having a piece of paper saying you're a Swedish citizen doesn't really change very much anyway.
Right, let's go back to Radio Canada International in Montreal and Alan Familion. Being so far from Europe, Alan, do you find difficulty in finding people with language skills in, say, Russian or Hungarian?
It's not easy. The foreign language announcer producers have to be either Canadian or landed immigrants in Canada. We have to judge them on radio broadcasting experience, journalistic experience. So in order to get a combination of all those plus the language is rather a difficult task, but I think we're managing.
And if you're working in a language department other than the national languages of English and French in Canada, what do you do simply? Translate text given to you and present them in front of the microphone?
Our program format is a half-hour block. The first 15 of minutes of which is centrally coordinated, that is, material is written in English and French, the newscast itself, news background or press review. Those are done in English and French only and then translated into the other languages. Where the announcer producers have freedom into working in their own language is the other 15 minutes, the other half of the program, which is called Spectrum. They have the same access, they have the same material to listen to, but they have an additional burden of having to translate or edit it.
What would your mother say? No, I can't get what would. Sorry, one more time. I'm not getting what would.
What about Radio Netherlands, situated in a small country where the people are conscious of language? Will they give you a second chance if you don't speak Dutchville?
It is not a precondition for hiring that people that are coming to work for us in the English section know the Dutch language. However, as they go along, we expect them to pick up the Dutch language. Now, reading newspapers, reading magazines, looking at television, listening to the radio, all helps to give ideas for programming. Knowledge of the national language is very important in that. But I think I must make it clear that our producers are not people that are going to sit down and translate items from the Dutch language into the English language and use them as such. They have their own responsibility in formulating the text, the way they speak about it. That may be a difference with some of the other stations abroad. To summarize it, I think we work with foreign producers on the basis of equality with the Dutchmen. They are not in a function that they just get work handed to them by our Dutch staff. No, they do it themselves.
Well, Mike McMahon, what about Switzerland, where you've got a number of national languages? Presumably being able to speak at least one of them with you is very important.
It certainly is. We, of course, favour people who, in addition to English, speak both German and French. But we will take someone who speaks one of those languages if all the other parameters look good. We're given a certain number of work permits. I don't know what the exact number is because we have seven language services, but we're given a certain number of work permits or the right to apply for work permits, and we can't exceed that. Basically, what we want our people to do is to produce a current affairs program called Dateline. They're also required to participate in other programs, feature programs, to do documentaries, if you like, on life in the country.
What would your mother say if you told her you were thinking of a career in shortwave broadcasting?
See, I got it right in the end.
The voice of Pete Myers, who's our jingles man, or at least the voice behind the jingles. Pete, there's one question I'd like to put to you, since you've been in broadcasting, I think, for about 25 years now.
I feel old.
Would you say it's better to be a good all-rounder in international broadcasting, somebody who says, right, I've got a good voice, I've got a tape recorder, I'm ready to do something, or is it better to specialise in a particular subject?
I used to think being a good all-rounder, you know, was excellent, and that's what I started out as. I used to be a disc jockey, I used to specialise in African affairs, I used to be an interviewer, you know, and talking to stars, etc., and all that, and I found it got me nowhere. The future really is in specialising, I think, today in shortwave radio. What you've got to be is convincingly informative. And you've got to know your field. And I think there's a great future for people who specialize in whatever field they want to. Like you, for instance, you do media. And Bob and I, you know, we specialize in Asian events. John Hammond, for instance, our colleague, specializes in African events. You've got to read about it. You've got to practically live with what you're specializing in and follow events. And really, that's a full-time job.
So is the days of, say, the presenter who's the voice behind a particular piece and the producer who's the guy who's actually written it, those days are over?
In some networks, it's not over. For instance, in the BBC, it's not over. I mean, their system, and I've worked there for 11 years, so I know, was that a producer did all the dog's work. You know, he really did go and line up the items and said, here, this is what you're going to talk about today, and sometimes even fed you the questions, and you were just a glorified voice. You're not that here at Radio Netherlands. You've got to do it all yourself, and you've got to think, and that's nice for you because you can use your brain and shape your own attitudes to events, not someone else's. But a lot of networks, I don't think, give their voices that privilege. A lot of the words are written for people. I'm not in favour of that.
Of course, you have to be careful to specialise in useful subjects and find the right people who need your expertise. If that takes time to build up, then you may be forced to live in a country for a while simply to build up your knowledge and do odd jobs, like offering your talents to companies that want to make commercials for use abroad. Don't bank on it, though.
Here's famed folk singer Harry Drone with an original folk song composed for Ed Crow Tire Sales.
As I was out a-tarrying, 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 as I was out a-tarrying, a spider maiden fair.
Get to the part about Ed Crow.
It's building. As I was out a-tarrying, a-tarrying,
get to the Ed Crow tire
As
deal.
I was out a-tarrying, a spider maiden fair, I said unto the maiden riding on her horse.
Wait a minute. What's the idea of a maiden on her horse? Why don't you have a maiden in a car?
But there were no cars in days of old.
Well, for the sake of Ed Crow Tire Sales, let's pretend there were.
No, but that's lying. That's not the truth. Folk songs are truth. I cannot sing a lie.
You won't get paid.
I said unto the maiden riding on her car.
In her car.
In her car.
Oh, forget it.
Do you think I might get a grant from the government?
Just be thankful they let you live.
Yes, I was out a-tarrying, a-tarrying.
A flashback to 1963 there. Well, let's be more serious and cross to Barry Siebert, Radio Australia in Melbourne. Barry, how does your station get its announcers?
The staff at Radio Australia is provided by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Now, a number of the voices you hear on Radio Australia belong to people who choose to work exclusively at Radio Australia. In other words, people who are very interested in shortwave broadcasting. In every case, they're auditioned by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation and are in fact employed by them.
Barry, I think there's something interesting about getting an audition at Radio Australia as far as the general public's concerned.
Yes, well, apparently anybody can walk in off the street and if they ask for an audition, they must be given one. That doesn't mean that they'll necessarily get a job, but I think the act that incorporates the Australian Broadcasting Corporation stipulates that.
You wouldn't have to take out the expense of going to a private studio to show that you can do something, you mean?
Right.
Now, we have had feedback from parts of the Pacific and also parts of North America indicating that people would like to get a job at an international broadcasting station. What are the chances if somebody comes to Australia and says, I want to be a presenter or a producer at Radio Australia?
There is the question of the federal government immigration policy. We have a fairly high unemployment rate at present. One in every four of our youngsters is out of work and looking for a job. And I think at present, to migrate to Australia, you have to demonstrate to the immigration authorities that you have some specialist skill to bring with you. But assuming that a person is here in Australia and has got permanent resident status, there would be nothing to prevent them from auditioning. I should qualify that by saying that there is a preference on the part of Radio Australia management to employ people with an Australian accent. We feel that our listeners expect to hear Australian accents and that, in fact, that's part of the appeal, to hear those funny Australasian accents. We do have people with non-Australian voices working in specialist areas. We've got V.M. Chakrapani, for instance, who came to us from All India Radio. His expertise, of course, is sporting. In our public affairs programs, we have a Canadian. Except for those two areas I mentioned, there does seem to be a preference for Australian voices in the news and in general presentation.
So, what are the prospects elsewhere? In West Germany, Switzerland, France and Spain, for instance, recruitment is static at present. But what about the United States? On the line from Washington, D.C. is Susan Povenmire, Head of Promotion and Publicity for The Voice of America. Susan, do you have to be a United States citizen to sit behind the English service microphone?
Yes, there is a requirement if you are broadcasting for The Voice of America in English that you are an American citizen.
And are you actively recruiting people for that service at the moment?
The Voice of America is in a continuous recruitment posture for broadcasters in all 42 broadcast services, and that would include the English broadcast programming.
And you have to take some sort of test to get in, or just walk in off the street?
Well, there are many steps to applying for a position. They include submitting a resume and then taking a written exam. In the case of foreign language broadcast, that would mean translating from English into the foreign language. Also, you take an audition for a voice test, and then there is a background investigation.
What's that for, to check that you are who you say you are?
Essentially, it's to check criminal records to see that there is no criminal history.
And how long does it take to get in?
Well, the overall process for overseas recruitment does take a minimum of 4 to 6 months.
What about the people working in the foreign language services? Do they have to be U.S. citizens too?
No, the Voice of America has authority by U.S. law to hire non-Americans for non-English broadcasts. Of all broadcasters that are doing foreign language programming, non-English programming, about one-third of them are non-U.S. citizens.
Right, let's go back to George Wood in Stockholm. Are the prospects good in Sweden?
Right now, perhaps not. But within a few years, yes. Our staff in the English group is generally an older staff. We have a number of people who are within 10 years of retirement. So that within 10 years or so, 5 to 10 years, we are going to have very many openings at Radio Sweden in the English group. So that if there's someone who would be considering getting a job here, it might be good for them to start studying Swedish now.
Well, Mike McMahon in Bern, you mentioned earlier that the turnover at Swiss Radio is rather slow, so few vacancies for the time being for permanent staff. But do you think the effort of trying to get in is really worth it?
Well, I think so. If a person's interested in communication, which essentially I think all journalists and broadcasters are, I think this is the most exciting part of broadcasting, to reach out over these long distances to so many different types of people in such a way that no matter where the person is listening, whether it be North America or Africa or Asia, the message, the basic message will get through. I think it's terrific. If it's career satisfaction you're looking for, I think there's nothing better. But I don't really think that shortwave is going to go out very soon. I think we have a study group within Swiss Radio which is seriously looking at satellites. But to my knowledge, at this point, they haven't come up with anything that says it's all going to be satellites within the next 5 or maybe even more years.
Right, Alan Familian, what about prospects at Radio Canada International?
RCI has been, I would say, slightly expansionary role for the last few years. That doesn't mean that we've got a great deal of additional monies, but through reorganization and attrition, etc. So there may be openings. Their chances are probably quite good if they're outstanding.
Well, there's a glimpse behind the scenes. The rest, as we've said, is your own initiative. OK, before I forget, if you're still wondering about the voice behind that freelancer, it was...
Well, Jonathan, it's very nice to be here, I can tell you that. I'm Peter Barsby.
And what was the name of the programme?
The programme was World Radio Club, and that was good fun too.
Those are the days. Now, for the people who don't want a job in international broadcasting but just want to monitor it, let's bring up the line to Sri Lanka and our media man there, Victor Gunatilaka.
Coming on to DX News, of course, Jonathan, a very interesting observation from Radio Nepal. Well, they are using 7165 kilohertz, Jonathan. That's 7165 kilohertz. And this replaces 9590 kilohertz. 9590 kilohertz. Unfortunately, 9590 kilohertz started to give a lot of trouble with interference and very poor reception overall. So I think this is a very timely move to bring in 7165 kilohertz. And we hear it in the morning, signing on at 0120 and closing at 0350. And again in the evening at 1150 UTC. And going on until 1720 UTC. Quite good reception. And I might add that coming winter, that's closer to November, you might also keep your ears open for 3230 kilohertz, 3230 kilohertz for their winter frequency changes. Well, by now, I'm sure most DXs and even shortwave listeners are quite familiar with the wobbling noise that they hear on various frequencies in the shortwave bands, and of course medium wave DXs in Asia find it very common. Well, this wobble jammer originates in Iraq, and suddenly since say 2 or 3 weeks back, I've been hearing this wobble jammer appearing all of a sudden, Jonathan, on a frequency varying between 7000 and 7100. The wobble jammer is very strong here in Sri Lanka, and it keeps varying from day to day. One day I found it on 7055, the next day it's on 7074, and today, right now, it's on 7074 kilohertz. So obviously there is an anti-Iraqi station coming from Iran on this frequency. So it may be one of those clandestine stations. Quite interesting. And at the same time I also hear another wobble jammer, the same type, inside the broadcasting band, on 7145, and today I found it on 7135. So either it's the same station moving around on two frequencies, the time, by the way, 1430 to 1530 UTC. And with the sunspots going down and down, daytime reception from Africa has been picking up, especially on the 31 meter band. A couple of years back we heard hardly anything on 31 meter band at 12 noon. That's 0630 UTC to around 0730 UTC. But now I'm hearing Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, on 9684 kilohertz, 9684, with their home service in Swahili, and a little way up on the band, on the same band as 31 meters, I hear Mauritius coming through on 9710, a fairly good signal, unfortunately spoilt by the accompanying heterodyne, due to Radio Malaysia Kuala Lumpur, also on the same frequency.
Thanks, Victor. And now to this item, which reached our listener answer line last night.
Hello, this is Roger Tidy in London. The Foreign Service from Equatorial Guinea has been heard on a new frequency. I heard them tonight, Wednesday, on a frequency of 15107 kilohertz, 15107 in the 19-meter band. That's a move from their previous frequency of 7998.5. And I heard them this evening between 21.08 and closed down at 21.34.
Finally today, news just in from Radio Australia. As from this Sunday, September the 2nd, they appear to be making two very interesting changes that should improve reception in Europe. At least that's what they hope. The frequency of 15240 kHz is normally used by Radio Australia to serve the Pacific and has a 10 kilowatt transmitter on it. But as from Sunday, they'll be putting a second 50-kilowatt transmitter on the same frequency, beamed towards New Zealand, but they hope it may go further into Europe. The times to try are between 08 and 10 hours UTC, 08 to 10, and then in the evening 21 to 22 hours UTC on 15240. Also, if you're looking for the newly reactivated Darwin transmitter site from Radio Australia, it's serving Southeast Asia and the Indian subcontinent between 01 and 09 hours UTC on 21720 and between 01 and 0910 UTC on 17750 kHz. That's it for now. Next week, Media Network Special comes from the Ferrato Audio and Video Fair, which opens tomorrow in Amsterdam. We'll be talking about some new receivers. So this is Jonathan Mark saying back soon. Bye for now. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.